Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Have you ever heard of lupus? Well, as I said earlier on, I have, because my friend was the patron of lupus in the Midlands some years ago. But this month is Lupus Awareness Month, which is an opportunity for people to learn more about the disease and its impact on those people who have it. To discuss it in more detail is Paul Howard, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Lupus UK. Good evening, Paul.
Good evening, Clive. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Thank you for joining me. First of all, Paul, tell me about Lupus UK, the charity.
Yeah, thank you. So Lupus UK has been around as a charity for 31 years now, but it was founded before that. And ultimately, it's about bringing people who are affected by lupus together for mutual support, to raise awareness about the disease, to provide education and information, and also to fund research into the causes and treatments of the disease, and to fund specialist lupus nurses to improve the quality of care that people with lupus can receive through the NHS.
Now, for anybody that hasn't heard of lupus, what exactly is it, and can you describe its symptoms? I mean, I'm going to get you to expand on the name in a second, why it's called lupus. I do know it's the Latin word for wolf, but what's that connection?
That's right, yeah. So, yeah, we'll start with that. So lupus, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's the Latin for wolf, and the origins of that go back, they believe, to sort of medieval times when a particular type of lupus rash, which was called a lupus vulgaris rash, that appeared on the face, it could look like sort of similar markings to a wolf, or perhaps the more severe cases like a wolf bite. And so that's where it had that sort of connection and where the full name came from. And, I mean, we say lupus. Lupus is actually short for its full name, which is systemic lupus erythematosus, which is quite the mouthful, and you can imagine why we shorten it just to lupus.
Sure.
So the disease is actually, it's an autoimmune condition. So this is where the immune system, which would normally just protect you against viruses and bacteria, it also, in people with lupus, mistakenly recognizes your own body's cells as foreign invaders and attacks them. So what's happening here is that your body is producing loads of these autoantibodies. These are antibodies to fight your own body's tissues, and they'll circulate through the blood and can affect any of the sort of organs or any of the various tissues, causing inflammation and damage. So the range of symptoms that you can experience as a result of lupus is quite bewildering. It can cause basically anything that you can imagine. But the most commonly experienced symptoms and those most commonly reported include extreme fatigue. So that's a tiredness that won't go away no matter how much you rest. Joint pains, muscle pain and weakness are very common. Skin rashes are a common feature of lupus, and often those are sensitive to sunlight, so it's important to protect against UV light. Hair loss can be a symptom of lupus. Recurrent miscarriages can occur, and it can affect any of the organs. So the kidneys are the organ that's most commonly affected in lupus, affecting anywhere between a third to two-thirds of people with lupus. And then the lungs, the heart, and the brain can all be affected. So it's a serious illness, and it can be very difficult to diagnose as a result of how it presents, because no two people tend to have the same set of symptoms.
So how do you go about diagnosing it then?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is to really be aware of what the potential symptoms are and consider lupus as a possibility. So if you're presenting with a range of different symptoms that are common in lupus, such as, you know, really severe tiredness, joint pains affecting more than one joint, maybe some rashes, then it might be worth considering whether lupus is a possibility as a diagnosis. And that's one of the biggest hurdles, because first of all, a lot of these symptoms, you'll be familiar with them, they're not necessarily exclusive to lupus, mm-hmm. and they might have much more common causes, just like being tired, aging, stress, you know, all of that can cause similar symptoms, but perhaps not altogether and not to the same extent. And so thinking of lupus is the first step. And then there are tests that can be done. So there isn't a sort of a single blood test which can confirm for sure whether you have lupus or not. Mm-hmm. But there are blood tests which, combined with your medical history and the various symptoms you present with, can give a really good indication of whether you would have lupus or not. So if your GP suspects that you might have lupus, they'll usually do a few blood tests and then refer you on to a hospital where you can see a specialist.
Then what happens? Because you can't take medication for it, can you? So how is it managed?
Yeah, so there are medications for the treatment of lupus. There's a few different types that they will use, and most of them are actually borrowed from other conditions. So the one that's most commonly used, first of all, is actually an anti-malarial medication. And that's one of the ones that they prefer because it tends to be quite a safe and effective treatment. But it tends to be sort of best used for the more mild or moderate cases of lupus. And those cases where it's more severe and you've got organ involvement, perhaps, they'll need to add on other treatments. So things like steroid medications and immunosuppressant medications, they'll quite commonly be used to help in the management of lupus. And these work by effectively weakening the immune system, and that prevents that sort of self-attacking, dysfunctional attitude that's happening in the immune system. Mm-hmm. But the downside to it is that it's generally weakening your immune system as well, which means that you'll be more prone to infections. So things like bacteria and viruses are more of a risk. And that's obviously something we've seen recently with the COVID-19 pandemic, that it's been of quite significant concern for a lot of people with lupus.
Mm. It's clearly life debilitating. Is it life threatening?
So treatment has come a long way. So we're fortunate that these days it's becoming less and less frequent that someone will lose their life as a result of lupus. But unfortunately, and very sadly, it does still occur sometimes. And that can be particularly prevalent in some groups. So young people, when they are diagnosed with lupus, tend to experience more severe disease, and they're more likely to have mortality as a result of their diagnosis. And also those from some black and minority ethnic groups are more likely to experience severe disease as a result of their lupus as well. And therefore, the rates of mortality in those groups can also be higher. But certainly the treatment has improved. And the good news is that there are more new treatments coming down the pipeline now, which are getting cleverer and cleverer, that they target very specific parts of the immune system that go wrong in lupus, and therefore will hopefully fix the bit that's going wrong without generally weakening the immune system and prevent those negative side effects that can happen.
Now, you're talking earlier on about, you know, different kinds of medication. So malaria, for example, malaria medication, immunosuppressants. Is it true to say that chemotherapy can be a treatment option too?
Yes, in an extent. So a lot of the medications are borrowed from other conditions, and some of those treatments have been borrowed from certain types of cancer treatments. Which, you know, commonly referred to as chemotherapies. I think the thing that needs to be considered when talking about chemotherapy when treating lupus is that the dosages tend to be very different. So when treating lupus, it tends to be a much lower dose than what would be used to try and sort of cure someone of their cancer. Mm-hmm. And so therefore it won't tend to have the same extent of side effects that someone would have from chemotherapy for treating cancer. However, you know, that's certainly not to say that there are no side effects, and they can still have a significant impact on quality of life. And certainly some people who are on these sort of quite strong medications, they can have a significant suppressive effect on the immune system. And, you know, in the last 18 months of the pandemic, that's meant that some people with lupus have been much more vulnerable and much more at risk from the virus. And even now, they're not necessarily generating protection from the virus from the vaccines, because of the impact of these medications.
Sure. Now, you said earlier on that it also it affects organs and joints and things, but just recap on the effect that it has on the skin, because for somebody who may be unaware that they're experiencing it, that it's possible that that may be the first thing that would alert their attention to the possibility of having it. Now, I don't want to over-egg the pudding in the sense that we all get little rashes and blemishes and things on our skin and we cut ourselves and so on and so forth. And those are the everyday things that we have to deal with. But where it affects the skin, just let's deconstruct that a bit and go through how it affects the skin.
Yeah, so with lupus, it can affect the skin in quite a few different ways. One of the sort of classical symptoms of sort of skin involvement in lupus that we tend to see is a rash across the bridge of the nose and the top of the cheek. And it often sort of forms a bit of a shape like a butterfly. So we call it the butterfly rash or the malar rash. And one of the reasons that it often appears here is that those higher ridges on your face are areas that are more likely to be exposed to sunlight. So as I mentioned earlier, UV exposure can be a trigger for lupus rashes. And so more commonly than not, they will appear on areas that are exposed to the skin. And in some cases, they can be relatively mild. So they could appear as a fairly light blush. And so actually they can almost make someone look like they've got a healthy glow. But in other cases, they can be much more severe. So there are a few different types of skin involvement in lupus. One of those can be called chronic cutaneous lupus, otherwise known as discoid lupus. Mm-hmm. And this causes circular rashes. And a lot of the time, these can cause scarring. So these can be particularly a problem when the rashes occur on areas such as the top of the head, where you would have your hair coverage, because when it then heals and scars, it can actually cause permanent hair loss. And because lupus, you know, predominantly affects women and young women, that can be, you know, particularly distressing, because hair loss is obviously a visible symptom that's difficult to cover up and to hide. Mm-hmm. And that can affect someone's confidence a lot and self-esteem. It can also affect sort of the cheeks and scarring. And I don't know if anyone's familiar with the popular singing artist Seal. He's quite famously talked about his scars from discoid lupus on his cheeks. And that can be a visual of how it can potentially affect people.
But again, those scars, we mustn't confuse them with things like rosacea, which are something different, aren't they?
That's right. And actually, rosacea is, you know, a very tricky one, because it can be very similar to some of the milder cases of lupus rashes. And it can be misdiagnosed if you see your GP, because rosacea is that much more common. They'll often suspect that it's rosacea first of all. And so it's important, if you are presenting with that type of symptom, that you also talk about any other symptoms that you're experiencing at the same time, because otherwise you can end up going sort of months and months being treated potentially for the wrong thing.
Is there a specific sort of diet or lupus diet or nutrition plan that we can follow should we present with that, or if there's a risk of it that perhaps runs in the family or something like that?
Yeah, so those are great questions. So certainly we know that a holistic approach to managing lupus is really important. So a healthy lifestyle is really useful in managing the symptoms and getting the best possible management there. So a healthy diet and gentle exercise and regular exercise are important. There is growing evidence looking at particular diets in lupus, but at the moment there's not enough to recommend one specifically. So generally what's advised is a diet that will look after your cardiovascular health, your heart health, and that isn't too inflammatory in nature. So some foods can cause inflammation,
and
that tends to be the problem in lupus. So things like saturated fats tend to be quite inflammatory. So if you have a lot of cakes and biscuits and crisps, those tend to be quite a bad thing to have in lupus. So what you want to do is try to focus more on having a plant and whole food based diet, fewer preservatives in your food. So if you're using whole foods, that tends to be healthier. And so the Mediterranean style diet, where you've got sort of oily fishes and lots of fruit and veg, is what's often recommended. But I think there's a lot of work being done now to really better understand the importance of, and the role of diet in managing lupus. And the question you asked about genetics and whether that's got a role, that's also an important question. It's a tricky question because there's loads of genes that are believed to be involved in lupus. Studies have shown that sort of over 100 genes so far that could be implicated in lupus. And because lupus presents differently in different people, it won't always be the same genes that are malfunctioning. So it's not common that it's passed on. It's certainly not considered a hereditary condition like sickle cell, where it's sort of a single gene that is involved in the development of the disease. But there are some cases where there is a strong genetic legacy in a family for lupus or for other autoimmune conditions that are similar. So you might see families where there are cases of lupus, type 1 diabetes, thyroid disease, maybe rheumatoid arthritis, and that can certainly happen.
Exercise is also important, isn't it?
Yeah, so exercise is really important in lupus for a few reasons. One is to look after your cardiovascular health, because people with lupus are more at risk of having heart disease later in life, partly because of the lupus and partly because of the medications that they have to take to control it. So anything that you can do to look after your heart health is important. It's also important because people with lupus often really struggle with fatigue. And there have been some studies to show that if you're able to include some gentle exercise in your lifestyle and in your routine, then it can help to sort of manage that fatigue level and prevent it from getting worse. Because we do know that there are some cases where people can become deconditioned, where because you're tired, you don't engage in any exercise. And then because you're not exercising, the condition of your muscles worsens, you've got less strength, therefore you get more tired, and it's just a vicious cycle. So it's about sort of making sure that you don't go into that negative spiral. But also, with lupus, it can be a challenge because joint pains and muscle pain and weakness can be predominant symptoms of the disease. So it's important to find an exercise that suits you as an individual. So exercises that aren't heavy on the joints can be very useful. So cycling, gentle walking, and swimming might be much more preferable to trying to do running or jogging, which can be sort of heavy on the knees and the hips.
Right. Okay. Interesting tips there. What will you be doing during Lupus Awareness Month then, Paul?
Yeah, so throughout Lupus Awareness Month, we're doing a lot of sort of outreach and talking about the disease. So we've been doing quite a lot of radio interviews. I was doing quite a few on Wednesday this week, and I was delighted to have the invitation to join you this evening, trying to talk about the disease, also giving opportunities for people with lupus to talk about their lived experiences. So I was joined earlier this week by a lady called Shannon, who was talking about her experiences during the pandemic, because like many people with lupus, she was having to shield throughout the pandemic, and she's got a young daughter who's in school now again, and so it's tossing up that balance between her personal risk and also wanting to make sure that her family are able to continue their lives. Mm-hmm. We'll be engaging in fundraising, so it's a great opportunity for lots of people to help support research and development into new treatments for lupus. So we've got the 31 mile challenge going on throughout October, where we're encouraging people to do a mile a day, get in some of that gentle exercise, and help to raise some funds towards a better future for people with lupus.
Excellent. Now, for people who are diagnosed with lupus, and I'm talking about any variation of it, what advice would you give them for managing it on a day-to-day basis, other than the things that we've talked about? So we've talked about exercise, plant-based diet and so on and so forth,
yeah.
But just something that things that they can, embroider within or involve rather within their daily life.
Yeah, so there's a few things that you can do. So lupus often has some recognizable triggers for flares of the disease. So that's when your disease becomes more active and more severe. So a lot of the time, sunlight, as I've mentioned, can be a trigger for lupus flares. And so wearing high-factor sunscreen, covering up against UV exposure, so wearing longer sleeves, avoiding the hottest part of the day in the summer, those can all be things to help manage the disease in that way. We know that stress can be a really big factor in autoimmune diseases and in lupus. And so if you are quite prone to stress, then trying to manage that in any way that you can be helpful. And that's always easier to say than to do in managing stress, because we all live such busy lives. But things like mindfulness meditation are things that people have found helpful. Sometimes having a pet and taking it out for a walk. Again, gentle exercise can be a good thing to help manage stress. And importantly, following your medication regimen as well. Sometimes it can be difficult to see the benefit of treatment. If you're still feeling unwell and you're taking the treatment day after day, a lot of people with lupus might be taking quite a few medications each day, but it's all serving an important purpose in helping to manage the disease. And certainly I've spoken to quite a few people with lupus who in the past have stopped the medication, unsure that it was really helping them, and then regretted it within a few days and found that their lupus was flaring. So, there are times when the side effects might be bad, but if that's the case, talk to your doctor about it, and otherwise make sure you follow the treatment regimen.
I mean, for anything really, it's always important to take the medication as prescribed by your doctor and not stop taking it unless your doctor has said that you can do so. So you're quite right. You must keep it going regardless of the side effects. Where can we find out more information, Paul?
Yeah, so hop onto the Lupus UK website, which is www.lupusuk.org.uk. We've got loads of information available there. Anyone who's not online, you can give us a call on 01708 731251. We're in the office 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. And we're also on all of the popular social media sites when they're working, so you can find us on there.
Paul Howard, the Chief Executive Officer of Lupus UK, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.